This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. Our guest, John Lasseter, is the executive producer of the animated film Monsters, Inc., which has just been released on video and DVD. Lasseter also directed Toy Story, Toy Story 2, and A Bug's Life. These are films which not only made great strides in computer animation techniques, they were very popular among children and adults. Lasseter received a Special Achievement Oscar for Toy Story. In 1988, his short film Tin Toy became the first computer animated film to win an Academy Award. A founding member of the Pixar Animation Studio, Lasseter is now Executive Vice President. Terry spoke to him earlier this year. Let's start with a scene from Monsters, Inc., a comedy about monsters who work at an electricity company where they manufacture power by scaring children and making them scream. The two lead monsters are voiced by Billy Crystal and John Goodman. In the scene, they sit down to watch a new commercial that they're featured in.
The future is bright at Monsters, Incorporated.
I'm in this
We're
one.
Part
I'm
of
in
your
this one.
Life. We power your car. We warm your home. We light your city.
I'm Monsters Incorporated.
Hey, look, Betty!
Carefully matching every child to their ideal monster to produce superior scream, refined into clean, dependable energy. Every time you turn something on, Monsters Incorporated is there.
I'm Monsters Incorporated.
We know the challenge. The window of innocence is shrinking. Human kids are harder to scare.
Of course, MI is prepared for the future. With the top scarers, the best refineries, and research into new energy techniques.
Okay, here I come.
We're working for a better tomorrow. Today.
We're Monsters Incorporated.
We're MI, Monsters Incorporated. We scare because we care.
I can't believe it.
Oh, Mike.
I was on TV! Did you see me? I'm a natural! Hello? I know! Hey, wasn't I great? Did the whole family see it? It's your mom. What can I say? The camera loves me.
John Lasseter, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, one of the things I like about your movies is that they have social satire in them. And in this instance, in Monsters Incorporated, there's this big monster corporation that has, you know, its own branding and
right.
TV commercials and right. all the stuff that we expect from, you know, corporations, a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
You like having the chance to get in social satire in a kid's film.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's part of the thing that adults get and actually are entertained by that are over the kids' heads. I mean, the kids are just enjoying the characters and the adventure and the slapstick and all that. And where the adults are kind of getting these comparisons to our world. Like in Toy Story, for instance, one of the big things was to make the personalities of the toys be adult and not to be childlike personalities. And so when Andy left the room and the toys came alive, that was like a workplace. Being a toy and being played with was like their job. And so they had plastic corrosion awareness meetings. They had staff meetings. And in the same way with Monsters Incorporated, we looked at this corporate world and we studied, for instance, the graphic design that happens within big corporations and how they have, you know, everything is done exactly. We figured that with capturing scream from kids, that their boom time actually was in the 50s during the baby boom era. There were so many kids all over the place that they just were making money hands over fist, and that's when they expanded tremendously. And so when you look at the architecture in the movie of Monsters Incorporated, it has a very 60s look to it, late 50s, early 60s. We studied the architecture of like Brasilia. You know, and all these places where it's just this nutty architecture from the 60s that are really cool. And so we modeled it after that because thinking that's when they were expanded tremendously. The graphic design had very much of a feeling of Paul Rand, you know, the great graphic designer who designed a lot of elements, you know, in corporations back then, the UPS logo, the CBS logo, on and on and on. And all those things brought together, and so it had made for a believable world. If there was a world beyond a closet door full of monsters, yeah, that's what it would be like.
Let's talk about creating the monsters. I mean, you can't do research exactly on what monsters look like, although we all know monsters. We all know Godzilla. You know, we all have a lot of monsters in common. So what's the process like? I'm sure there was several animators and designers who were working on the monsters. Maybe you could just let us in a little on the design process.
What we did is in creating the world of Monsters Incorporated, the monsters, in this world, we wanted to find kind of a, you might say, a style of monster that could be unique to Monsters Incorporated. So we did a lot of research and looked at, you know, the history of monsters in cinema and TV and so on, and even in children's books. And we saw that there was a certain style that, say, the Muppets had, a certain style that Maurice Sendak has in Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah, I think the John Goodman monster is very Where the Wild Things Are.
And then, of course, there's the Ray Harryhausen creatures that, in fact, Ray Harryhausen visited the studio and we talked quite a bit about it. And he actually said one thing that really was...
Let me just stop you and say Ray Harryhausen is the king of stop time animation.
Yeah, stop motion.
Stop motion, thank you.
Yeah. You know, with this tremendous, you know, influence that he's had on creatures and monsters, he said one thing that was really important to us, and that was that the monsters in his film are only monsters when they're provoked. He said they're just regular creatures. In fact, he doesn't even like to use the word monsters. He uses the word creatures. And they're just living their regular life, and then it's always the outsider, the human, that comes in and sort of provokes them, and then they become monstrous. And it was a very interesting insight. And so what we did is we looked at all these existing sort of monster worlds and monster designs that have been out there, and we tried to find something that was unique. One of the things that we did is, knowing our medium of computer animation and how it can produce things that almost look real, that are really photorealistic, we started looking at the animal world and looking at textures and elements. And we pulled from, like, Mike Wazowski, the lime green one-eyed guy that Billy Crystal does the great voice for. His skin is very much like a Brazilian tree frog. It has this kind of reptilian skin. We studied that. Sully has... You know, it's completely covered with fur, and the fur is inspired from yak fur. It has a certain kind of matting quality that it has, and the horns are like a ram's horns. And we actually got these elements in and really studied them and created textures that look like this. But we said, you know, what we want to do is then we don't want to make it look just like a real animal, because we started actually coloring Sully more of kind of an orange and a natural look to him, and they just look like animals. And so what we did is thought about, well, they come into kids' rooms and scare kids, and kids sit there and draw these magnificent images of what monsters look like. And so we said, well, why don't we have these realistic textures, but then have them colored like what a kid's imagination, what their monsters would look like. And so that's when Sully became this turquoise blue with purple polka dots, and Mike became lime green. And in all of the monsters that actually go in and scare the kids are these incredible bright colors. You know, the monsters in Monsters Incorporated that just are the support monsters for the scarers, they're a much kind of duller colors. You know, it's really the bright colored monsters are the ones that go in and scare the kids. But it's this combination of kind of research and then thinking through, you know, the world and the process of, like, okay, these monsters come in and scare kids, you know, and it's a kid's point of view is what they see with the monsters. That's where this kind of the unique world of our monsters came into being.
How do you match actors' voices to the monsters? No, I mean, like, Billy Crystal and John Goodman, these are famous names. You know what they sound like. I don't know whether you feel you need the need to audition them first or not. But can you talk a little bit about the process of matching up this this imaginary monster with a real actor's voice?
At Pixar, when we're developing the story and developing the character, we are always thinking about a particular actor. Sometimes they're actually older actors that have passed away, but it's a type of character that we're looking for. Then when it comes down to the voice, casting the voice, we'll make a list of actors we think that could fit that particular type of character. And to try it out, we will find a performance in a movie or a TV show that they've done. We'll take just the audio of this and put it against drawings or images of the character, just still images. And it's amazing how you could sit back and you can look at this, and some actors, you know, they're brilliant actors, but you realize there's a lot of it has to do with the way they look and their facial expressions and their movement and so on that adds to their brilliance in acting. And when their voice is there just by itself, it's kind of flat. And we then take other actors and we'll put up there, and they just jump off the screen, and they're great. And we tend to go for an actor not by how big of a star they are, but by how great of an actor they are. Two, we never ask an actor to put on a voice. We want them to be natural, because it's just part of our thing is we want the characters to be just completely natural and real. You know, even though they're a toy, a bug, or a monster, you know. And then what we'll do is always look for people that have great ad-lib ability. Trying to find spontaneity in this laborious process of making an animated film frame by frame by frame is something that we always are striving for. And part of that is in the recording of the actor. We have a script. You know, they come in before the animation's done, so they really have nothing to look at. Generally, they're there by themselves in a studio with a mic in front of them. And we're always trying to get them to make the scene, make the dialogue their own, make it just sound absolutely as natural as possible. And so when you get someone who's so brilliant like Billy Crystal to come in, he just gives you, it's like he's got a staff of writers in his head. He will give you 100 variations of everything. And we actually got him and John Goodman together, and they were amazing because the two characters needed to be like friends since kindergarten. And so by getting them in there, all of a sudden, they had never met each other before, but they came in and they just, it went up to another level. These guys knew each other since kindergarten in the performances, and it was really incredible.
John Lasseter speaking with Terry Gross. He's the executive producer of the family film Monsters, Inc., which was just released on DVD. We'll hear more of Terry's conversation with him after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, our guest is John Lasseter. He's the executive producer of Monsters, Inc. He directed Toy Story, Toy Story 2, and A Bug's Life. Terry spoke with Lasseter earlier this year.
Let's talk about your first feature, Toy Story. And in this film, you imagine what life is like for the toys in a boy's bedroom when the boy leaves the room. And you go through all the big fears that a toy might have, being replaced, being sold at a yard sale. And most of these toys are old-fashioned toys, like a cowboy doll, a dinosaur, toy soldiers, a little Bo Peep doll. And let me play a scene from very early in the movie where Woody, the cowboy doll, which is voiced by Tom Hanks, is holding a meeting of the toys to prepare for the fact that Andy, the boy who owns these toys, is going to be moving to a new house.
Hello? Check. That better? Great. Everybody hear me? Up on the shelf? Can you hear me? Great. Okay. First item today. Has everyone picked a moving buddy?
Moving buddy? You can't be serious.
Well, I didn't know we were supposed to have one already.
We have to hold hands.
Oh, yeah. You guys think this is a big joke. We've only got 1 week left before the move. I don't want any toys left behind. A moving buddy. If you don't have one, get one. All right, next. Tuesday night's plastic corrosion awareness meeting was, I think, a big success, and we want to thank Mr. Spell for putting that on for us. Thank you, Mr. Spell.
You're welcome.
Okay. One minor note here. Andy's birthday party has been moved to today. Next we have...
What do you mean the party's today? His birthday's not till next week.
What's going on down there? Is his mom losing her marbles?
Well, obviously, she wanted to have the party before the move. I'm not worried. You shouldn't be worried.
Of course Woody ain't worried. He's been Andy's favorite since kindergarten.
Hey, come on, potato head. If Woody says it's all right, then, well, darn it, it's good enough for me. Woody has never steered us wrong before.
Come on, guys. Every Christmas and birthday we go through this.
But what if Andy gets another dinosaur? A mean one. I just don't think I can take that kind of rejection.
Hey, listen. No one's getting replaced. This is Andy we're talking about. It doesn't matter how much we're played with. What matters is that we're here for Andy when he needs us. That's what we're made for, right?
John Lasseter, did you come up with the premise for Toy Story?
Well, I came up with it along with my colleagues, Andrew Stanton, Pete Docter, and Joe Rampt. And we work in collaboration at Pixar, and we just we fell in love with this because this idea of toys coming alive. I did a short film called Tin Toy back in 1988, and it was about a little small tin toy that was alive and being chased by this little drooling baby. And from the toy's point of view, it was a horrible monster. And we always loved the idea that toys being alive. We thought there was a lot more you could do with it. One thing we didn't want to do is with our first feature is just do a kind of a what a lot of animated features were being. They were kind of like musicals with, you know, a good guy, a bad guy, comic sidekicks, a love interest, and we wanted something different. And we loved the buddy picture genre. You know, the films like Midnight Run, 48 Hours, The Defiant Ones, The Odd Couple. We just love this. One of the reasons why we love this so much was this tremendous character growth. And I think when you have a character that really grows, there's a lot of emotion there. And that's the thing that we've always strived for in our films.
So the buddies in this are the cowboy doll and the newer, more modern, high-tech doll, the battery-operated computer chip.
You're right.
Space doll.
In the buddy picture genre, one of the goals is to begin with the two characters being absolutely different. But on a deeper level, they're very much the same. They're both classic American heroes.
Let me ask you about A Bug's Life. This is a kind of epic about worker ants that are basically enslaved to the larger, more powerful grasshoppers who demand a hefty percentage of all the food that the worker ants carry away. Let me play a scene from this. The head grasshopper, the real heavy in the movie, is played by Kevin Spacey. And here he is early in the film issuing his demands and warnings to the ants. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the princess ant. Phyllis Diller is the queen ant.
So where is it?
Where's my food?
Isn't it up there?
What?
The food was in a leaf sitting on
Excuse
top
me?
Of... Are you sure it's not up there?
Are you saying I'm stupid?
No.
Do I look stupid to you? Let's just think about the logic, shall we? Let's just think about it for a second. If it was up there, would I be coming down here to your level looking for it? Why am I even talking to you? You're not the queen. You don't smell like the queen.
She's learning to take over from me, Hopper.
Oh, I see. Under new management. So it's your fault.
No, it wasn't me. It was...
First rule of leadership. Everything is your fault.
It's a bug-eat-bug world out there, princess. One of those circle-of-life kind of things.
A scene from A Bug's Life, and my guest, John Lasseter, directed the film. A Bug's Life was kind of, in some ways, like a slave epic.
You know? A slave epic. Well, we call it an epic of miniature proportions. Because we got very inspired, actually, looking at the world from an ant's point of view. We got down, and the research we did, instead of going off to exotic locales like a lot of people get to do, we just went out to the planters in the garden in front of Pixar and stuck our heads under all the plants and looked around. And the world was amazing when you get down to that level. I love working at Pixar because we have the most wonderful geeks, and they saw us with our heads under the plants and said, you know, we can help you. And they went off and they created this tiny little video camera. We call it the bug cam. And it was put on the end of a dowel with little wheels, and we could roll it around from a, you know, like an inch above the ground and look at the world. And one of the things we found at this level was that everything is translucent. A blade of grass, a fallen leaf, a petal of a flower. When the sunlight's shining through it, it's like a stained glass window. And it was spectacularly beautiful. Mm. And there was this big fallen leaf I'll never forget. And we put the little bug cam under it. And it was like all of a sudden you were in this magnificent, huge building with this beautiful, like, orange and yellow stained glass window above you. And that became one of the biggest inspirations for this. And so most of the movie kind of takes place up out of the tunnels above the ground. And so it, we had to create actually new lighting tools to get this beautiful translucency in there. And the story is really fun because it's much more of an epic story than Toy Story was. And we had these great bad guys, and we did a lot of studying of grasshoppers and how they, grasshoppers are, you know, when they get together and start like massing, they become locusts and it becomes these hordes and so on. And we just love that idea. And when we started looking at the way they were designed, it almost looked like the back of biker jackets, Hell's Angels jackets. And so we had the idea that they were like this Hell's Angels, group that comes in and terrorizes a small Midwestern town and demands, an annual payment. And so that's where the kind of the idea came from. And that's where when Kevin Spacey says, leaves, he always says, let's ride. And they start up their wings, kind of like Harley's starting up. In fact, in the soundtrack, there actually is, the sound of Harley's, mixed in with kind of insect buzzing noises when they start up.
Well, John Lasseter, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, this has been great, Terry.
John Lasseter is the executive producer of Monsters, Inc. Terry spoke with him earlier this year. Monsters, Inc. has just been released on DVD. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.